On the 10th of June, 1987, an Old Town Festival was held in Tartu, Estonia. As the day's program came to an end, one by one, with no previous coordination, the attendees started singing the unofficial Estonian anthem, prohibited at the time by the Soviet government. The crowd grew, amassing around 15,000 people, and then marched to the Song Festival grounds, where they continued singing local folk songs about their land long into the night. By the next night, the word about this spontaneous eruption of patriotism had spread, and once again the crowd gathered at the Song Festival grounds and sang until sunrise. For a week straight, crowds of up to 100,000 people gathered in the same spot singing patriotic songs, representing almost 10% of Estonian citizens. One of these nights, a rock musician rode his motorbike flying the Estonian blue, black, and white flag, which, just like the anthem, had been banned since 1944, when the Soviet occupation began. These events sparked what is now known as the Singing Revolution, a three-year-long peaceful resistance movement which spread throughout the Baltic states and eventually led to the restoration of independence for all of them. My name is Terry McDonald, and this is the Tallinn University Podcast. It's no surprise that given Estonians' historic relationship with song and dance festivals, music has always held a special place in the Estonian national identity. In the 30 years of renewed independence, Estonia has been able to cultivate an extraordinarily rich art scene throughout the continuous support of music and film festivals, artistic projects, and individual initiatives. PUFF, the world-renowned short film festival, lights up the capital every November during the darkest nights of the year. Another such festival, Tallinn Music Week, is just around the corner. This festival is held annually in the capital, with additional stages now in Narva, eastern Estonia. For the 14th time, the festival will bring artists from around the world. This year's lineup, consisting of 175 artists from 28 countries, with every conceivable musical genre included, all performing throughout the two cities from the 4th till the 8th of May. Tallinn Music Week has been going on since 2009, surpassing a decade of constantly growing worldwide recognition, known for its bold genre combinations and exceptional variety. Here's a little sample of Estonian artist Kadri Voron playing at Tallinn Music Week. Today, as a special treat, we'll be joined by two guests. First, Helen Sildna, founder of Tallinn Music Week, to shed some light on the inner workings of the festival and its phenomenal journey. Helen has been a music promoter and event producer since the year 2000, and in 2009 she established her own music promotion company, Music Case, later rebranded as Shiftworks, the current production backbone of the Tallinn Music Week Festival. Later, we'll also speak with Monika Tomingas, who's a lecturer at the Baltic Film, Media and Arts School here at TLU, and a project manager at the Estonian Folklore Council. We'll discuss the Estonian support of the arts. We'll talk about how art helped preserve Estonian culture in dark times, and how the Estonian state has helped create a resurgence in Estonian art today. Hope you enjoy these two conversations. Hey Helen, welcome to the Tallinn University Podcast.
Hello, nice to be here.
So, just for those who don't know, what is Tallinn Music Week? How did it come to be?
Yeah, we founded Tallinn Music Week back in 2009, and the main goal was to enhance Estonian music exports. It's essentially a showcase festival, which means a talent festival where artists would perform to be playing also for the local audiences, of course, and music fans, but also to international music community. Buyers, bookers, festival promoters, record labels. So what we do is every year we invite over at least 100 handpicked music industry professionals all around the world to take notice and spend the time exploring new talent based in Tallinn. Let's say around 60-70% of our programming is always Estonian.
Okay.
And then we welcome European and international artists to play here as well.
Okay. So what was your inspiration for starting this?
Yeah, in 2000, it was an interesting time. 2008, it was a big economic fresh, basically. But paradoxically, it was the time when in Estonia we started talking about creative industries more. And as my previous work had been, I've been in the music industry since the year 2000, essentially, and I've been a music promoter. I was then working for the country's biggest promotion company.
Okay.
But at the time, I was starting to think more and more, how come none of Estonian talent gets to play abroad, really?
Mm.
And what can be done? And then I was able to go and explore and visit some of the showcase festivals all around Europe. And as I saw, there was something similar going on in Norway. There's a festival called Bilarm. There's a European festival titled Eurosonic based in Holland. And I was starting to see these formats, and I was starting to explore also, what does it mean? What do these organizations that title themselves as export offices, what do they do?
Okay.
Then I started realizing that it's not an accident or a coincidence that new talent from upcoming territories would get to be seen. It's actually strategic work at the back of it. So we thought that we came together with the Estonian music community and kind of sat down and kind of had a conversation, what can be done. And we thought that setting up a showcase festival was something really practical that we were able to do, and then we did it.
So has it unfolded as you hoped?
It has, and actually interesting to think back at this 14 years, how much has changed. Of course, in Estonia right now, we have this fantastic organization now as well, say, it's titled Music Estonia,
okay,
which is the export and entrepreneurial development organization in the music sector. So right now, it's not only anymore Tallinn Music Week doing all the kind of networking work, but many, many partners involved in this. And Music Estonia is a key role in this as well. So I think it dawned me this year when we had the Estonian Music Industry Awards Gala just a month ago. And it's an annual event where we award some of not just the artists, but the people behind the scenes and so forth. And it was really impressive. There were 200 people, and people getting awards from like the label of the year, the manager of the year, the sound company of the year. And somehow it just dawned on me how much has changed for the Estonian music industry, that not only are there single individuals doing this fantastic work, but all of them have teams now, companies of 5 to 10 people with kind of like shiny bright eyes thinking it's a brilliant thing to work in the music sector. So I don't know, I think we've changed the music sector dramatically. It's, you know, thinking back to 2009, it was even an odd coincidence that an Estonian artist would get to play in Riga. Yeah, we didn't even have solid connections with our neighbors in Finland or in Latvia, really. They're very coincidental and kind of random based. But now it's playing the Baltics or Finland or the close by territories is a norm. And that wasn't always like that.
So as you mentioned it, what sort of like public support have you gotten like from the government?
Our first supporter was actually the Tallinn European Capital of Culture.
Okay.
In 2009, when we started, Tallinn was to become the European Capital in 2011. So they were the first stakeholder. And then there was small money from the Ministry of Culture as well, labeled as the creative industries development, kind of a seed money or something like that. But on that front, things have developed quite a lot as well. Back in 2009, the concept of, for example, that culture would promote tourism or kind of like enhance tourism, that concept was completely alien. It was so new. And people were thinking, well, we're out of our minds to think that, you know, tourism and culture sector have anything to do with each other. But right now, for example, one of my favorite pieces of statistics is that, you know, there's this organization called World Tourism Organization that has done a study saying that 40% of tourism across globe is motivated by culture.
Mm.
So we're a reason why people travel to places, which is really so logical. You would go to a museum, you would go to national heritage sites, you would go and visit, I don't know, galleries or exhibitions or festivals, so forth. So it's kind of, it sounds common sense to us now, but it was very new to Estonia back then. But yeah, our biggest funders are the Ministry of Culture. Then every year we apply for support for the Estonia Tourist Board, which is through EAS, Enterprise Estonia, the City of Tallinn. And the beautiful thing is that from this year, 2022, Tallinn is now the UNESCO City of Music, which is a very proud fact. And, you know, after the pandemic has been a positive thing for the music sector, that there's something like an additional piece of funding, but also kind of a strategy and something that motivates and unites us together again. And let me think that I don't forget anybody. Of course, there are, you know, embassies and funds, and we're part of some projects which are EU-based as well, through the Creative Europe program. For example, we're part of an international network called Key Change.
Okay.
And the purpose of it is to support females and gender minorities in the music industry. And that's funded by EU, so so there's some EU funding in it as well. But still, the festival is privately owned and privately run, and relies a lot on private sponsors and ticket income and everything else as well.
Why, as a society, should we fund the arts?
Yeah, I mean, it's my favorite topic. And luckily, there's more and more research backing up the story that you know, culture should not, in my opinion, be seen as a cost for a society. It's more of a catalyst that kind of brings about social change, different societal kind of positive effects. For example, let's think about integration in Estonia. We're very lucky that in Estonia, actually, the integration as a topic and a kind of a sector and a funding piece as well is already in within the kind of broader umbrella of the Ministry of Culture.
Okay.
And this makes a lot of sense because we can understand how culture brings people together. So we talk about the societal impact and, of course, you know, people's mental health, you know, especially after the pandemic when we were socially distanced and we still need human contact. Then bringing people together through cultural events, but also to museums and experience music and to have something else positive also at the time of war, to kind of being able to calm ourselves with arts and culture, I think it's really, really essential. But the other side of the coin is, of course, the economic impact as well. We've seen so much proof how culture actually makes kind of catalyzes processes to happen. Let's think of Telliskivi Creative Hub.
Okay.
You know, it was a deserted part of the town, kind of a run-down old shabby houses on the other side of the train station. And suddenly there's somebody starting to do a creative hub there that has turned around a part of the city completely and increased real estate prices as well.
For those who have never been to Tallinn, like the transformation in that neighborhood has just been remarkable in the last 10 years. It's almost unbelievable.
Yeah, and then something we're doing with our team in Narva, which is the border town between Russia and EU, based in Estonia. Well, Narva is a town that has got 96% Russian-speaking population. Of course, in there, two things come together. Integration topic, but also in very basic level, how to motivate young people to stay in Narva or stay in that region and build their futures in there, but also how to bring life to secluded places that have like a natural kind of deficit of young people wanting to get out of that area. So I think culture's economic force is something we just need to prove more and more. In fact, there was a recent study issued by the Ministry of Culture just actually a week ago, showing, casting light, another proof how culture is a driver for economy. To exports, for city branding, for positive image making place, branding in the game, so to speak, for enhancing tourism, for promoting secluded neighborhoods and areas in neglect, for including members of the society who naturally don't feel as part of the society. I mean, the endless positive impact.
You're very passionate about this. Can you tell us what you see as the role of the private sector in funding the arts?
Well, I mean, let's say in America, the whole structure is based on private sector funds. But I think something on that front in Estonia, we need to kind of really pay attention to develop that further. Of course, there are companies who sponsor the culture and the arts. But I think something that hasn't started yet in Estonia that we see quite a lot in the Nordic countries is that they would have these cultural foundations, quite often started by private individuals or private companies. And that doesn't mean anymore that private sector only sponsors to get promotion and branding and marketing. That means that it's kind of part of social responsibility of people, individuals and companies to invest back into the society. You know, it's kind of, there's a saying, it's a bit like norm of if you have profits, then the nice thing to do is to invest 10% of your profits back into the foundation of it through education, culture, arts, because in the end, we all stand on the foundation of that great success. And if we think about the startup success story of Estonia, which is beautiful, then I think the success of the startup sector also relies on a general sort of a creative platform where all of us, we stand on it, basically.
So overall, do you think Estonian society does enough to support creative industries?
Enough is a very final word. There is always room for improvement. In terms of statistics, you know, Estonia has made this dedication to put 2% of its state budget into arts, which as a percentage is a good number, but in real numbers, because of the inflation and everything, the funding to arts has decreased. So there is definitely room for improvement. And there's always room for improvement, not only to think about the total numbers of money, but to think what's happening within it, to invest smarter. And what I would love to see is that we don't talk about supporting, we rather talk about investing and kind of turn it around a little bit of, you know, that if we put the seed money at the grassroots level, you know, it's inevitable that the top stars and the talents will rise as well. I think something important with the public funding is that we, in my opinion, we shouldn't only nurture the bright and shining top talents. We should always pay attention, you know, what's the ground level that starts growing, what's the fertile ground, and how do we put into the foundation and the fertile ground so that, you know, you work with the 100% and then maybe 10% will grow into the bright and shiny. But you need to kind of constantly groom the ground, so to speak.
You've touched on this already, but as we live in a time of conflict, what role do you see the arts playing in intercultural communication?
Well, I mean, it's impressive to see what Ukraine is doing in so many levels. I mean, the bravery of that nation in very general terms, but also, and I think it has to do with the background of their president, who actually has a background in arts and culture and acting. You see that the president of Ukraine in a time of war would find time to make a speech on Grammy Awards, or would find time to make a piece of music, would find time to kind of promote the artists. And some of those towns and cities in Ukraine that, you know, the Russian troops have pulled out, the first things that they put in place is to make the orchestras, cinemas and theaters to work again. So it's a really powerful thing, and it's so smart. You know, it gives people back, you know, the kind of like meaning or purpose to do something. So I think, you know, if we think about their example in how they do it, but also how, in our experience, you know, when the war broke out on the 24th of February. We were supposed to have a record number of Ukrainian artists play at Tallinn Music Week. At first we thought that, oh my God, we lost them all, we can't have them. You know what the beautiful thing is, that now five of them are playing in Tallinn Music Week.
Wonderful.
And all of them have this kind of artistic integrity, that they see how powerful their voice is at this moment. So they play to spread the word, and they play to make Ukraine visible. And if that doesn't prove us, the rest of us in Europe, that culture is a powerful voice, then what else would?
Yeah. I was lucky enough, I had the honor of being here when you hosted the famous Russian dissident band Pussy Riot. But I know you've also gotten criticism for attending Saudi Arabia's first music conference. How should we engage with artists and artistic communities in countries with repressive governments?
Yeah, I mean, my perspective on this has always been that there are governments and there are people. And I mean, it's a very tough choice right now with some of the artists and artistic community in Russia as well. At that moment, you know, there's been kind of a common understanding in Europe that Russian artists don't play. Of course, it's very clear cut when it comes to state-funded arts from Russia. But you know, when it comes to people like Pussy Riot or dissidents from Russia, you know, how do we deal with them? You know, my approach and our organization's approach has been, like, I will first mention what do we do with the Russians and then go back to the Saudi Arabia thing as well. We keep in touch with all of them. It's very important that we don't lose the dialogue, because I think if we isolate them, they lose part of the motivation to fight the war, essentially. So, you know, we had to say no to a record number of Russian artists to Tallinn Music Week ever. We were about to confirm 22 artists out of Russia to this year's festival. So we actually not just only cancelled their participation, we gathered them in front of a Zoom call, and we actually had a two-hour very heavy discussion with all of them. And we came to a joint decision together with them, not only us just making a decision for them, that right now is not time to put them on stages, because it would hurt the Ukrainian artists who would possibly come and play. So we decided that they're all welcome to join us here as delegates and visitors, but no Russian talent plays on stages this year, just to honor the Ukrainian people. When it comes to Saudi Arabia, I mean, that was something quite extraordinary experience. I was there physically in December, and this is a country where, let's talk about women's rights to start from, you know, this was a country, of course it's an Islamic country, 100%. This is probably, I think, the only country still in the world who doesn't have state law but has Sharia law. So 3 years ago, it was only, I think in 2000, and starting from 2018 and 19, that they started adding rights to the women. And it was in 2019 when they opened up the country to general tourism. Before that, only foreigners were allowed to enter the country to come to prayers, essentially. Okay. So I went along on this project, and I was able to support, there were like a couple of individuals with who I know personally, that thanks to the fact that they got in touch with some of us from the Western people. There's a one lady who I met, who during those 3 days there back in Riyadh, which is the capital city of Saudi Arabia, made a choice that she came from a wealthy family, and she would put her family wealth not into owning a house or a property, but starting her own company. And she made a decision to start a metal music agency. And this is a country where music was 3 years ago prohibited. And I saw all these people there, you know, who had been worried, you know, personally worried about their kids, about their own futures, just only by playing music publicly. So the kind of like opening up of that society is one of the most powerful things I've seen in my life, because frankly I don't think that we've witnessed that much of a societal transformation anywhere in the world than within those 3 years in Saudi Arabia. I just hope that there wouldn't be a huge backlash on it.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, rapid change in a society tends to bring back some kind of a backlash. So I mean, I think personally, we would be doomed as humankind if we judge people according to what their governments do. That's my take on it.
I know you've got a very busy week ahead of you, so we'll wrap up with, what are you hoping to achieve with Tallinn Music Week this year?
We made it, you know, after 24th February, we did some heavy thinking, you know, what's the purpose of a festival in a time like this, essentially at the time of war.
Yeah.
And as we have been able to promote Station Narva Festival based in Narva for 5 years, so Station Narva is celebrating its first big birthday, the 5 years anniversary, we thought that what's unique in our organization is that we have these two branches of an organization based in Tallinn and based in East Estonia in Narva. And the Narva team is mainly Russian-spoken, part of the Estonian community. So we thought that this is something unique of our organization. So what we can do is to support the unity and solidarity of Estonians, but also to make a statement to the West and saying that Narva is Estonia, Narva is EU, this is where EU starts from. You know, how many times have we seen international press gathering up to Narva asking, is Narva next Donbass?
Yeah.
We say firm no to that. We say there's no need to constantly keep on asking that. Any of our countries in Europe and EU, or any of our cities in Europe, are essentially as safe as Narva. So strengthening our borders and showcasing solidarity on our border countries and cities is the most important thing to do in our defense structure right now. That's my opinion, and that's why we're taking part of Tallinn Music Week to the border. We're going to go to music and culture to the border town, and we're going to say we're strong there together with Europe.
Helen, it is always inspirational to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for this interview.
I guess I'll see you at Made in Canada night in Tallinn Music Week.
Yes, this is a beautiful tradition that I'm so happy we don't have to skip even this year.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So as we discussed with Helen, festivals like Tallinn Music Week have been able to flourish in part due to the support afforded to them by the Estonian government, art foundations, and Estonian society. Next up, we're going to have Monika Tomingas, as we said, here to discuss the history of Estonian support for the arts and why it's so important. Hello, Monika. Thank you for joining us on Tallinn University Podcast.
Hello. Good to be here with you.
So, could you tell us about how Estonian culture was preserved during the occupation?
Well, it is a complicated question.
Naturally.
But during the Soviet times, it was preserved in two ways. By local Estonians who stayed here and by the ones who went abroad. So I don't know if you're familiar with it, but we have a lot of Estonian communities all over the world.
We had the ambassador to Canada on 2 episodes ago. So yeah.
Yes, and you heard, of course. But yeah, because even Hemingway said that in every port you can find an Estonian. So it does work, really. There are some rare places I've been to and I haven't met an Estonian. There are some places in the world it's possible, but it's complicated not to meet Estonians. Anyway, so these are the choices. So the ones who went abroad, they of course had more freedom to be creative, but they were not so much surrounded by the language and our local culture, and they didn't have the local influences. So it's sometimes with the ones who went abroad, talking to their children or grandchildren, they have this very romantic, idealistic, a bit naive view how Estonia is, because they have only heard it from the stories, and it's super cute. And I met a few people who have come here, and they've been like, oh, I thought that every Estonian is in a sorority. And I'm like, no. So it's like, but it's super nice. And just like talking about folk dance, I also used to teach folk dance. So we have this one author called Ulla Domi, and he has this kind of a dance Bible. And the ones who went abroad, then for them, if some of them took it with them, this book was Estonian folk dance and has still been for a long time, until we started having some kind of videos of dances. And then they were like, oh, there are other possibilities, really? And this is like so interesting to see, like, how they describe Estonia, what is Estonia to them. But anyways, during the Soviet times, the ones who stayed here, the local ones, of course, there was a huge pressure of Russification. Any kind of creativity was restricted. And the main motto used to be socialist in content and national in form in Estonia. So this is what you could do during the Soviet time. So anything that was very kind of beautifully national was okay, kind of, but it definitely had to be through the socialist ideals. And the intellectual elite that we had in Estonia was under strong pressure, very strong ideological influence, and there was a lot of censorship, and it was there to stop the spread of free ideas, of course. All of the information from the West was blocked. We were totally isolated, and any contact with science or culture was seen very negatively from the government. And a lot of cultural heritage was destroyed. A lot of books, periodicals were destroyed, and of course, banished from everywhere. And a lot of propaganda, of course. This is something you can at the moment really see a lot still in Russia, of course. Maybe you've heard.
Yeah.
And
well, speaking of that, you mentioned Russification. Can you explain that to people who might not know what it is?
It's in the sense that, like Soviet Union, the thing is that we are all one nationality. There is nothing else. Everything has to be in Russian. If you wanted to accomplish anything, you were supposed to join the Communist Party. And everything that had some kind of critique towards the power was, of course, censored. A lot of people were, of course, sent to concentration camps, sent to Siberia. And so any kind of pressure to do what is proper for the Soviet person was only okay. And of course, a lot of pressure with language, and also during with the arts. It's I like this dance. And another example from Estonian folk dance, there is one dance called kolhosi dance.
Okay.
So kolhos was the community that you had, kind of, where you were supposed to grow your cattle together, and everything you provided, you have to give to the Soviet Union. So, and then it was distributed everywhere. So like they were like
a collective farm sort of thing?
Yes, a collective farm. Yeah, sorry, that's the word. And so it's a collective farm dance, for example. So this, it's really strange in a way, but I kind of like dance. So so collective farm is the great ideal of the communist Soviet person. So it's just like some things like this weird ideals that you had to work towards with the culture also. And if you did something else, then of course you weren't very well looked at, or your work was maybe not ordered, because mostly arts in the Soviet times were by order of, and especially a lot by the order of the government. So
did that create pressure on Estonian language itself as well?
Yeah. Well, it existed here, but of course, everything official was only in Russian mostly. So that's also. But people preserve their culture really at home. And even we couldn't celebrate, for example, Christmas. So this is a small thing that a lot of people who wanted to keep the tradition still did it very secretly at home. And just like these kind of small things. So a lot of people like knew that some were celebrating Christmas, but no one ever never talked about it. You couldn't talk about it. And if, of course, in art and literature, there was the possibility, if you were good enough and smart enough, to hide some of the ideas between the lines. It's always about interpretation, of course. And so it is still possible when you look at some art pieces or some literature, you think like, wow, how could this have been even printed out or done or painted during the Soviet times? But you could hide the idea well. And when the censorship asked, then you just said some kind of a nice socialist idea behind this painting, for example. But it started to change. So at the the end of 80s,
okay,
and then life became more free, and people were, they could feel it, and they were more opinionated and expressed their culture. And there was a huge and very strong movement in folklore, for example, and lots of Estonian music concert, big concerts, people gathered, like you maybe heard, we are a nation that sang ourselves free. And looking at the folklore, a lot of people started practicing it, researching the old songs, dances, getting nice Estonian national costumes and these kinds of things that you could somehow show Estonian culture more, because in folk traditions, it was more accepted also.
Okay. Well, on that theme, what has been done to reinvigorate Estonian culture since the dawn of the independence movement and the restoration of independence?
In that sense, I'm very happy that culture has always been something very important to Estonians and to Estonia altogether. And I really feel that our ministry is doing, and government is doing, a lot to promote Estonian culture and to share it. And there is a huge enthusiasm, I would say, in Estonian culture. And in that sense, they support it, but like always, there is never enough money. And a lot of this, a lot of culture is still based on enthusiasm, I would say, even. So, but one thing that has definitely helped and has worked very well is Estonian Cultural Capital, Cultural Endowment, Eesti Kultuur Kapital.
Okay.
And they put it together in 1994. And they get money from at the moment from alcohol and gambling tax. So every time you raise a glass with wine, you're like, I'm supporting culture.
Happy to help, Monica. Happy to help.
Yeah, thank you. I know. I also tend to help a lot. Anyway, so the Culture Endowment was formed in 1994, and it still exists. And even if we had some economic lows, let's say, then it was still there. So the idea is to support Estonian artists, and they have, and it still works very well, and they have different, let's say, departments, and so they support, the groups are literature, music, visual arts, architecture, theater arts, audiovisual arts, folk art, and sports. And it's very easy to apply for the funding, and it, you get the possibility to apply 4 times a year. So that's already quite a lot. And so this is, I'm very happy that it has worked, because I know that Latvia also had its has its culture endowment. But for example, when we had economic lowdown, then their culture capital or culture endowment was quite, the money was cut very low, for example.
Oh, no.
This is some kind of money that the culture ministry and government has said that is very important, and this is not something that they will take from. So it's always important to promote culture and support it. But of course, there are lots of fields that could do better. The film industry really needs a lot of funding, and they don't have good rooms to do it and so on. And so it's very different in different art fields how it's going, because I would say that, of course, now you can promote, you can do anything, you can do any kind of performance, you can write any kind of a book. So the opening has been huge, and the communication, of course, with different countries is something that also liberates a lot and opens the country a lot. So so it has been, it has really changed, and very super, very very super fast, I would say. So looking that we are here 30 years later,
yeah.
And we are, I would say that in the culture field, we're doing great. We have very good theater field. The dance field is quite good. Folk culture is quite popular.
You've been named a cultural capital of Europe?
Yeah, it was in 2011. Yeah, sorry. and 2024 cultural capital is going to be Tartu.
Yeah.
So this is also coming. So this is a huge thing, really. And to see how Narva has been promoted in the recent years. And I'm very happy that we do have a lot of children also practicing a lot of cultural activities. So dance is super, super popular among youth. And we have lots of dance festivals and so for youth also. So it's very good to see that it is popular to be a cultural person in Estonia, because look at the numbers, how many people go to the cinema or how many people go to the theater. So it's huge.
Well, as you bring it up, has there been enough done to encourage culture in the cities outside of the capital, you think?
Of course, it could be better. It could always be better. But I'm happy that there are some regional programs also that support theater and dance performances going outside of Tallinn and to smaller regions. There are some theaters that specialize in totally lost my thought. Wow, I don't even know what I wanted to say. Great. Anyway, okay, so there are some theaters that do kind of focus going on tours all over Estonia.
Okay.
But every summer, Estonia totally wakes up, because behind every bush, there is a theater production. So in the summertime, you have to visit all the summer performances. It's mission impossible. You would have to see two performances a day and be on the road all the time. So this is crazy. And so in the summer, culture is everywhere. So this is, I think, super nice. And what I'm very happy is that we do have nice cultural houses. But regionally, it's a lot also depends, the funding of culture and how much it is there depends a lot on the local governments, because if they are fans of culture, then culture is better supported. This is an honest opinion, I would say, okay. Because in some places you can see that that sports is more in the heart of the local government and you can feel it. But still, in a lot of places, I would say the cultural activities and culture is based on enthusiasm and very, very cool, enthusiastic people. In Estonia, we have this word, the säde inimene. So it's like a spark person.
Yeah.
So I really like the word, but the reality is that sparks don't tend to last very long.
Yeah, they need some tinder to catch. Yeah.
Yeah.
On that theme, would you say that there are things that Estonian society could be doing to support the arts that they aren't?
that's me thinking. If we look at the future cultural policy, Estonian Culture 2030, of course, there are lots of things there that could be developed. But I wouldn't say at the moment that we're in a bad state. I think we're quite in a good one, especially that we don't have so many people in Estonia, and having a small country is always super expensive. We have a lot of minorities, for example, in Estonia, more than 200, and more 200 different nationalities living in Estonia. Mm-hmm. And I think they are quite well supported, a lot of the groups and a lot of the kind of unions, but they could always be more shown, because I definitely think that this is something that very well supports integration. So this is something that is very done quite well. What else? Gosh, there are so many different things that could be done, because like also on the local level and also in the, well, let's talk about, I'm thinking kind of like not only to talk about money, but one thing is definitely the fees in cultural field. and a lot of freelancers in Estonia. They don't have the social support.
Mm.
And or they don't have the possibility to just go to the doctor because they don't have their medical insurance.
So if you're a freelancer, you don't qualify for health coverage?
Not exactly, yeah. Only if you do projects correctly, if you have a contract, that also covers that amount. But you have the possibility to pay it yourself also. It is about 200 euros, I think, at the moment, or something like this, that you can pay yourself to our kind of health social department, and then you will get your social security in that sense. But otherwise, if you're just a freelancer, then not really. And this is definitely something that the ministry is at the moment discussing how to solve. But it has been an issue for a long time.
Of course. Could you tell us about the condition of arts education in Estonia?
I would say that I think it's very, very different and very liberal. And the thing with education in Estonia is that they are trying that the different curriculums are not doubling themselves. So a few years ago, we used to have also in Tallinn University, not only a few years ago, sorry, it was already like 10 years ago almost, that we also in Tallinn University used to teach music teachers in bachelors. But it was also in theater and music academy. And so it was said by the education ministry that curriculums, if we have free education, then curriculums can't double themselves. And so people have been looking also for different options to keep the curriculums vibrant, different, modern. And I think in a way, like putting this kind of a pressure on it that we can't have double things, it's also kind of pressuring people to think out of the box.
Okay.
And doing different curriculums and solving it very differently. For example, we had choreography department. We have it in Tallinn University, and we also used to have it in Viljandi, so in Tartu University, Viljandi Culture Academy.
Okay.
But Tallinn University is the one who is the main one giving out choreography degrees. So from the education ministry, said that Tallinn University is the one, but Viljandi Culture Academy has now joined it into one curriculum. So they have one curricula, they have the choreographers, they have theater arts and actors, they have lighting designers. So they are all based in one curriculum. They have main subjects together, and then they have their own modules that they take separately.
Okay.
So it's but there are lots of things that they are doing together. So I think it also teaches you more to be an interdisciplinary artist. That is something that you very much need.
Yeah, especially in modern times when you need many streams of income. Yeah,
If you tend to take, like, for example, choreography, then you tend to like fit a lot of dance things there. But if you already have some kind of a strong background in dance, and then you go to study like visual arts, and in a more open sense, you still have some dance things that you want to focus on, you can take extra classes always. But you also get the possibility to see how it could be visually solved, how also to be a bit of a lighting designer yourself, how to put the full picture together. So it also like widens it. So I really think that the arts, there are so many things with art to study in Estonia, and the curricula are very good and very well developed. And I think we have very, very good teachers in universities teaching arts.
Beyond universities, if we want to go back to, like, say, elementary school level and such, one problem across the West for the past generation has been cutting of arts programs for children, like in public schools. How would you say that is in Estonia?
It is just an issue. I think it was last autumn because of the Corona crisis, it was said that we have to have some cuts in budgets, and so the education ministry said that now we're giving less money to local governments to support any kind of activities. So the government gives funding to the local government, and they have their own choice how to distribute money to different, it could be arts, it could be sports, it could be robotics. So it's different kind of like extracurricular activities what they have. They could be with schools or outside of schools and so on. And also the local governments also add some kind of funding there. But that's the thing, that now they're cutting the budget, and it's going to be the question how we're going to continue now. Because as I said, a lot of people teach culture based on a lot of enthusiasm. And a lot of the extracurricular activity teachers are teachers. Mm. They are the ones who also help to broaden the children's view to the world. They also have to be professionals and have a very good background. They can't just be a random person walking out in from the street.
Of course.
And for me, it's like they are teachers. Why should they get less money than teachers at schools? So I think that the school teachers at the moment are, let's say, quite okay funded. And
that might be a controversial opinion.
Okay funded, I would say. Better. But the reality is that in university, lecturers and professors and everything, they get less paid than in schools as a teacher. Mm. So that's the big issue that a lot of very good teachers from universities are also going to teach at schools. They get better funded there.
It seems, to my personal experience, that Estonians are very musically literate people. A lot of them grew up singing in choirs. A lot of people know how to read music, like higher than the average population. Would you say this is the case?
I sing, so I might be a bit tilted in that sense. But I think that music is a lot of the kind of thing that like flows in our veins. But one thing that I think that people used to do a lot was during any kind of get-togethers, birthday parties, during putting up bonfires, sitting around it and singing. So it has been something that we have been doing a lot, but it's getting less and less, I would say. Because it's easy. You pick up your phone, pick any kind of song and let's start singing. But it isn't something that people come together and do it as much as we used to, I would say. Mm. But other ways, of course, you look at our song celebration, it seemed awesome. Yeah, wow, great, so many people. So that in that sense, people sing a lot. The quality of choirs is very, very good. But I know a lot of people also, I hope it is changing. I really do hope that say that they can't sing. I believe that anyone can sing if you only want to. It is something you can practice. It just needs practicing. Yeah. Mm. So, but I know a lot of people who have said that at school, my teacher told me that I can't sing. And so I don't sing. And I'm like, why not? And even I have a little brother who is 10 and he was in kindergarten. So 5 years ago. And we started singing with my sisters. I have two sisters and we all sing.
Okay.
We have been singing choirs and we should form a family band and go to Eurovision, I'm quite sure. But anyway, so we were singing together with the sisters something very like easy, I would say. And I know that my brother also knows this song and he wasn't singing. And I was like, oh, come on, sing with us. And he was like, I don't know how to, I'm not good at singing. And I was like, what? Who told that to you? That's not possible. Everyone can sing. And he was like, no, my teacher at kindergarten told me that I can't sing. And I was like, where is she? Where is the woman? Where is she? And I was like, I totally got so angry because like, you can never say this to a child. It doesn't matter. I have friends who are not so good singers. And I'm totally saying, yeah, let's go sing karaoke together. Because it isn't about singing. It isn't about hitting the right notes always. It's about having fun. And this is important.
So on that, a two-part question here. I know you've got to catch a flight, so we'll go out on this one. How important is art and supporting art to the Estonian identity? And then how can society continue to support it going forward?
I think, of course, culture has to be funded well. But in a sense, I also feel that we should be moving a bit more also towards the private sector, in that sense that in a lot of countries, well, example, look at the States, they don't have lots of cultural funds to support, but they have a lot of supporters from private sector. So this is something that isn't so popular in Estonia yet, that you support art as a private person, that you buy a more expensive ticket to support it, or you have this kind of a friends club next to a cultural institution that supports the cultural institution also, or you fund a theater production because you just believe in the director or so on. So this is something that should be developed more, I would say, because there is never enough money to support everything that we do. And in that sense, I think, yeah, we have to find different ways of funding also. We can't only rely on public money. So this is also something that we should look into. Can you ask the first
question? Well, what does art mean to the Estonian identity as we go into the future in a globalized world?
This is something that we, I think, very strongly appreciate, because when you're in school, then this is something that you hear all the time, that you're so much part of all the time also, or you're doing extracurricular activities. Then you tend to go to the university, you tend to pick your own choices. And this is some kind of an age that kind of takes a break a lot from culture, I would say. And you're coming back to like national or folk culture, then this is something that people start valuing more when they have their family, when they have children. Then they start questioning, where do my roots come from? And so they start looking a lot to the side of folklore culture, and then they have more time to also and funds to enjoy culture again. So this is some kind of a, I would say, a lot of the university gets some kind of a gap. There are still a lot of people, of course, during university also visiting and so on, but yeah, so it's like interesting to see like when you like youngsters who are not so interested in folklore or the roots or anything, and how it changes at some point, that this is becoming so important, doing knitting or looking some national patterns or just like, so it's in this sense, I think the culture is so strongly connected to our identity. And this is something that will keep Estonians wherever they are in the world. But, and in the sense, you know, because it was so interesting to see, I was visiting a folklore, we had this huge folklore festival last summer in Russia, in Bashkortostan.
Okay.
And you go to every kind of cultural center there, and it has been nicely fixed up, even if you look around and the houses are falling apart. But the cultural center looks nice, and everything that they perform there is only like national folk kind of things, I would say. I can't say art, I say kind of things, because they tend to take folk songs. They all learn folklore mostly there. And then they put like music there behind it, and you're looking at it thinking, oh my god, this is so horrible, and thinking, but in Estonia the variety is so big. In any most cultural houses you can do a lots of different dance styles or different kinds of music, so it doesn't, so the opinion, the options, there are so many options you can choose from. And this is something that keeps people in culture also, that there are so many options. And and of course that in that sense we have less like folklore groups than or folklore practitioners, I would say, than in Russia if we compare. But I like it that there is the huge variety in our culture, and people are not afraid to mix different things, different styles, different media. And this is something that we could never have if we were still parts of Soviet Union, because then only we were supposed to be doing like nice national things, coming together, singing during song festivals and doing some kind of dances, only folk dances. We wouldn't be having hip hop, jazz, like very good ballet or something else. So it's, I like the variety, and you can be part of culture in so many ways, and you can see that people do enjoy it. And this is something that also keeps us Estonians, I think. Yeah.
Okay. No, definitely. A culture that is forced to be stagnant doesn't grow. So it makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. Well, Monica, I know you got to catch a flight, so we're going to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us on TLU Podcast, and we hope to see you again. Okay.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Thanks.
Our producer is Avo Ulvik, our research coordinator is Vega Smolue, and we've had additional contributions by Aniruta Inamdar, Jana Levitinia, Kano Yusue, Katrin Helen Kasavandik, and Temitope Aluko. Our theme song is Ghost of 68, written by myself, featuring Paul Simmons. Any additional music is composed and performed by myself or Avo, except of course our little sample from Avo Part today. Today's episode is brought to you by Italian University's Bachelor of Arts in Politics and Governance program. The BA in Politics and Governance is a contemporary academic program combining a strong politics and governance core with a variety of choices, including international relations, economics, and management modules. It is a curriculum aimed at preparing students for the more complex and interrelated world of today. No country or company is an island anymore. They're all affected by political, societal, and economic trends, national and international policies, governmental and non-governmental actors. The program equips students with a broad knowledge basis to prepare them for a future not just in government or party politics, but also as knowledgeable and capable actors in international organizations, the third sector, NGOs, or the private sector. I myself am a lecturer in this program and can attest that it is broad-based, it is enjoyable, it is international, and it is all in English. And it is quite affordable. You can find out more at www.tlu.ee/admissions.